it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. It is a Monday edition of the show. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We spent most of the weekend with you. And we can't thank everybody enough for your support and your viewing of the Pewter Report live draft show that went on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So after a day of recovering real quick on Sunday, we are back at it in the post-Bucks draft area as today's show. We will recap every single pick that the Bucks made and discuss this amazing draft that the Buccaneers had. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is the face that runs the place at PewterReport.com, SR Scott Reynolds. Scott, we got some new graphics and we got some new players on the Buccaneers. How we feeling?
Feeling pretty good. I think this was this really was an amazing draft for the Buccaneers. They picked some really good players, and more importantly, they hit on so many needs that this team really needed to address. And I think right off the bat, you get Graham Barton with the first round pick. Now, if you followed Pewter Report's pre-draft coverage, you'll know that a couple of things. Number one, we had Chris Braswell actually as our first
pick
in our first mock draft in the middle of January after the Bucks made a playoff exit. So difficult in that first mock draft because you're trying to there's no college all-star games yet. There's no testing numbers. Boards are just starting to get kind of, you know, filled out and there's a lot of movement on boards. Didn't even know Chris Braswell was a first or second round pick, but I kind of felt like it might be a Bucks fit. We go to the Senior Bowl, Matt, and to be fair, you know, didn't have a really great Senior Bowl and was probably a second round pick, and we adjusted accordingly. Then in our next two mock drafts, we had Graham Barton as the Bucks first round pick. Probably would have had him as the Bucks first round pick in the next two mock drafts. The only thing is we didn't think he was going to be there, and neither did the Buccaneers.
Yeah, that was key for the Bucks. There was an infamous picture. We put it on Pewter Report's Twitter account, but it was Jason Light speaking on Thursday night after the Graham Barton pick, and he's pretty much got his hands like this, and he's looking up at the sky, praising the good Lord for Graham Barton being available.
And Jerry Jones, too, of the Dallas
Cowboys. Yes, and praising Jerry Jones for trading out of their spot because the Cowboys obviously were a team that could have used an interior offensive lineman. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was key for the Bucs. And in an interesting overall draft for the Buccaneers because they did not make a trade in this entire draft. And they had, for years, going all the way back to 2020, they've made some type of trade, whether moving up or moving back every single year. And even John Spytek, the assistant general manager, who we spoke to on Friday and Saturday, was kind of joking that, you know, Jason Light was sad that that they didn't make a trade. And he also joked that Mike Greenberg was kind of like poking at Jason to do something, especially in that fifth round when the Bucks didn't make a trade or didn't have a draft pick, excuse me. But they let the board fall to them. And yeah. I think in most cases throughout this whole draft, everything worked out for the Bucks in terms of people that they wanted and the availability of the prospects that were attainable for the Bucks that kind of fit their roster and fit needs on this roster too.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things Jason Light had to say about Graham Barton, he's the epitome of what we look for in this culture that we're building here, that Todd Bowles wants and we want to lead our draft class, not only lead our draft class, but lead our team. And remember, during this pre-draft process, I likened Graham Barton to Ali Marpet. I called him Ali Marpet 2.0. Watching Graham Barton at Duke and interviewing him at the combine, the 6'5", 313-pounder, looks, plays, and even talks like Marpet. Mm-hmm. It's uncanny how Barton looks like Marpet 2.0. And you know what, Matt? Marpet was a team captain, too. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line, this guy becomes a team captain as well. Todd Bowles had this to say. He fits the prototype of what we're looking for, big, fast, and strong. He's a guy we sought highly coming into the draft, and he kind of came to us, so we were ecstatic to have him. Now, this is some pretty heavy and heady stuff from Graham Barton. It's about fitting the person and finding the right people to mesh together. You can teach scheme, you can teach install, and you can coach players, but you can't necessarily change their makeup as a person and who they are. And Matt, we had the chance to talk to Graham Barton after the press conference in more of a kind of an informal setting with the Bucks beat writers.
Yeah.
What was your initial impression of hearing how he talked, what he had to say, the delivery, everything?
Yeah.
What are some things that came to mind?
Yeah, initial reactions to him in the second half of, again, the chill press conferences we were talking about, kind of more behind the scenes. Can tell right away his passion for football and overall just his football IQ. I mean, he got asked a couple of, like, specific technique questions, specific, you know, formation questions and playing in an offense. And I thought he gave really well-rounded responses that actually gave insight into what it's like being an offensive lineman and how certain techniques look. He's a pretty good storyteller as well. He was telling about his matchups against Jared Verse, who we talked about a lot on the Peter Report podcast. And he wasn't making excuses, but he was talking about some of the things that he was going through at the time in that matchup with Jared Verse. He had a sprained knee. He had an IV before the game, but he told us about the pep talk that he gave himself about how to just gut through it and keep it going.
Come on, Graham.
Yeah, exactly. So he cares about the game. A big thing he said was your body is your resume. And I think that's I thought that was a great statement. And it kind of speaks to him having a perfect relative athletic score during the whole draft process. It speaks to him being able to be a mauler as an offensive line.
10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
Out of 10, he's the highest rated center ever going back to 1987 in terms of athleticism scores. And he was the highest rated athlete in math bombs. Of course, Kentley Platt, his relative athletic score with the perfect 10. Only prospect this year that had a perfect 10.
Yeah, so he's a guy that's athletic, well-balanced, can kind of stick to his defender, be very physical, but also is nimble enough to move a guy, drive a guy back, get to that second level as well. And then also, I just think the right personality for this Buccaneers group. I mean, he was a little self-depreciating as well, talking about his golf game. He said, if I ever broke 100, I would tear up. So he's got a little bit of a sense of humor, which, again, does not matter for whether or not he can get the job done in his assignment when he's lining up against a defensive tackle. But overall, I think a guy that will mesh very, very well in the Buccaneers locker room, and kind of similar to the Bucs second round pick, Chris Braswell, who we will talk about a lot as well, a guy that stuck with it at Duke, had NIL offers to go other places for probably more money, but he loved the culture, the atmosphere, and the guys around him. And I think that's something you saw with obviously Graham Barton, with Chris Braswell too. And those are players, once again, that will ingratiate themselves into the Buccaneers locker room. So if he's an immediate day one starter, if he is Ali Marpet 2.0, just another example of a fantastic draft pick by Jason Light. Obviously, there's so much more work left to be done.
Sure.
But overall, as you said over the weekend, won the press conference.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's interesting about this selection too is again the fact that Buccaneers might have been tempted to trade up to get him, but they didn't have to because the Cowboys decided to trade out of that pick. And I had a question here from Christopher Oxentine. Who would they have taken if the Cowboys had done the smart thing and picked Barton? They actually would have taken Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois. Remember, we talked about the fact that Buccaneers were targeting defensive tackle early in the first part of the draft, and it didn't really materialize for them. It's interesting to note their first pick would have been a defensive tackle for the third year in a row. Yeah. Had it not been Barton, it would not have been Jackson Powers Johnson. And then they wanted some of those defensive tackles in the second round. They were very high on Rook Ororo. They were very high on Braden Fisk, Chris Jenkins, some of those guys. And there was such a run on the defensive tackle position
at the
top of the second round that really by the time they got to the 57th overall pick, those defensive tackles that they had rated higher than, say, Chris Braswell, who they ended up taking, were gone. So they basically punted on the defensive tackle position. I think there was a huge sigh of relief from Logan Hall, right?
Yeah.
Of him and how, you know, how he'll get this year to really get a chance to prove himself. And we've already had Will Golston, friend of the program, on the show.
Say it's going to be a breakout year for Will Golston. Yeah, that makes me curious, Scott. I wonder how much of the Bucs not drafting a defensive tackle this year is because either their confidence in Logan Hall to put it all together this season and in his third year in the NFL, or how much that run on defensive tackles kind of impacted what Tampa Bay wanted to do, whether it was round two or day two or even day three, how much of the guys that they liked were off the board that they said, all right, well, we'll grin and bear it with Logan Hall for another season before we really truly have to address it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. Richie P says, personally, after the Senior Bowl, was leaning towards Jackson Powers Johnson, but over time I learned to like Barton. Great pick. Yeah, and so if you didn't have a chance to read either one of my insiders, the post-draft insider yesterday, or my day two insider recap, I think that was Friday, the biggest thing about Jackson Powers Johnson was just the locker room fit. This is me talking. This is me. That's what I was told. It was about the locker room fit. And Jackson Powers Johnson, and we kind of saw this in Mobile and also at the NFL scouting combine, Matt, little bit of a flamboyant guy, a little bit
a Ric Flair a little bit, a little style and profiling.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And if you look at the humility, the humbleness, I mean, it starts with Tristan Wirfs, right? Tristan Wirfs is the leader of this offensive line, right? And Tristan Wirfs is one of the most humble, selfless, team-first oriented guys. He had almost be coaxed into a leadership role just because that's not his nature. But when you look at him, you look at Cody Mauch, you look at Robert Hainsey, those are the three kind of, you know, leftover guys, obviously Luke Getteke as well, you know, and Luke is outspoken, but very, very team oriented in his approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll jaw with the other team, but it's not going to be anything that's going to put the team in jeopardy or affect his teammates per se. And he's best friends with Tristan Wirfs. So
yeah,
that's the reason why there also too, just since we're sticking on the topic, same kind of thing with Christian Mahogany. Now we had him as a Bucs best bet. We had Jackson Powers Johnson as a Bucs best bet. Mm-hmm. And I think when you put on the tape, he screams Buccaneer guard, Jason Light type guy, but the interviews are important. And I think that was a reason why you saw him not just get passed over by Tampa Bay. He fell to the sixth round despite being a third or fourth round graded player. And so this was not just an opinion Tampa Bay shared. It was an opinion, I think, that was around the league, you know. And again, I have not gotten any details. It could be selfish attitude. It could be a bad attitude. It could just be a personality thing where he just rubs people the wrong way. I don't know what exactly it is. Sometimes when you say bad character, that means bad guy, like villain, like, like somebody who might break the law. And I don't know if any of those things are true or the case. It's interesting. He was a 2-year team captain at Boston College, but that was Boston College. That was, you know, that's a different culture than you're going to have in Tampa Bay's offensive line room or an NFL offensive line room. So those are the reasons we found out why those two offensive linemen were passed. And from what I was told, the Buccaneers were prepared to pass on Jackson Powers Johnson again in the second round. So,
yeah, and just to speak on JPJ with his, let's just say, big personality, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing overall. I like a guy that has confidence in himself and can bring a little electricity.
Yeah.
It just means that he wasn't necessarily a fit for the Buccaneers. Right. Someone in the chat said it seemed like a Raiders pick. It does kind of seem like a Raiders pick. And if his personality is too big and it's kind of detrimental to the team, then yeah, for sure, then that's the right move by the Bucs to pass on him. We have seen other guys that do have electric personalities, and it does necessarily work out, but the Bucs wanted to go with, let's just say it, a little bit of the safer pick with Grant Barden. And again, it's kind of like splitting hairs, whether it was JPJ or Grant Barden, in terms of like the caliber and level of football player that they are. So the Bucs went with a guy that they knew that they don't have to worry about from either a personality standpoint or a work ethic standpoint or really anything. I mean, he's already willing to move from tackle to center and has been working at center already this offseason before he even got drafted to the Buccaneers. And I thought it was very telling when stories were brought up about Grant Barden, about how he treated his high school playing days as, like, again, his resume, his this is his body of work to get him into college and into the NFL. So
he's had a professional mindset.
Yes, professional mindset.
You know? And so he's ready for the pros because he's been thinking this way since high school and all through the college years. It's 4:20. We're going to get to roll call in about 60 seconds. A quick question and answer here. Richard Taroka says, who are some of your draft crushes you wish the Bucs would have drafted? Selfishly speaking, I like to hit Bucs best bets.
Yeah.
the Buccaneers were one pick away twice from hitting two more Bucs best bets. They were poised to take Marshawn Lloyd right before the Packers selected Lloyd in the third round. And then that led to the Buccaneers drafting one of the Bucs best bets. We hit on Grant Barden. We also hit on Tykee Smith, who was the Bucs best bet. So we would have hit either way, but maybe the Bucs would have drafted Tykee Smith a couple picks later because they liked him a lot. At number 92, the other Bucs best bet we just missed out on was in the seventh round. They were actually poised to draft Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt, who was our second Bucs best bet. And they had the card ready to go, and the Packers once again stepped in front of Tampa Bay and selected Michael Pratt. And that's what led them to draft Devin Culp, the tight end from Washington, who ironically was going to be a Bucs best bet. He actually was a Bucs best bet until I changed my mind to Tip Ryman, which I'm still pissed out at myself over for doing. But so there you go. So that's
hey, it's not good. Like you went over though. I mean, you started off 1-for-1 with Grant Barden, and obviously with Tykee Smith.
Two's
so
a great
still,
number.
Still a job well done. In the Bucs best bet.
I appreciate that. And two is a great number. Our goal each year is to hit one. Once we do that, like let's go for two. But so very interesting stuff. So what also is interesting is when you do the live show with us on Monday, it's the best day of the week. Everyone has to go back to work, and that kind of stinks. But at the same time, we're all here at 4:20 for a little thing that we do every Monday called roll call.
That's right. It's time for some roll call. We do this every single Monday. So if you're new to the show, welcome. Get ready to join in on the fun. Every Monday show or the first show of the week, we love interacting with our fans as much as we possibly can because you guys are great. You guys are the best. And one of the ways that we do that is through roll call, where every Monday one of us starts going on a rant or a diatribe about your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And in the meantime, if you want to start putting up in the chat where you are watching the show from, we will put it on the screen. For example, Cincy Kid saying that they are watching from Tampa, and we'll get to every single person that puts it in the chat, and then we'll give a couple shout outs after to some specific people. So without further ado, let's get it going. I know Cincy Kid from Tampa got it rocking and rolling, and let's go.
All right, so here's the thing with Graham Barton. I love this pick, probably one of my favorite first-round picks of all time by Jason Light. I don't know that Jason Light has drafted what I believe to be a surefire Pro Bowler right out of the gate. Now, I thought Tristan Wirfs could be good. He was, remember, the fourth offensive tackle taken in 2020. And I like Tristan Wirfs. Tristan Wirfs was the 13th overall pick. But
correct.
I didn't know how dominant he was going to be. Even Jason Light didn't know how dominant he was going to be as a rookie. And greatness showed up early for Tristan Wirfs right out of the gate against Cam Jordan in week one in the 2020 season. And from there on, it's just been nothing but Pro Bowls and a couple of all pro selections as he has moved from right tackle now to the left tackle. And I think he's going to go back to the all pro caliber type of left tackle. He's going to have a better year this year after that first year of left tackle under his belt. Having said that, you look at some of the other picks. Vita Vea was a very good pick. Kalijah Kancey, I think, is going to be a very good pick. I'm going to put this guy up there with the surefire Pro Bowl guy. I believe that whether it's at center or whether it's a guard, this guy will truly become an Ali Marpet type. And because of his first-round pedigree and the fact that the Buccaneers now are a more elevated team in terms of making the playoffs, winning the division. Remember, Ali Marpet joined the Buccaneers in 2015 and had to go through all those seasons to get to 2020 to finally get into the playoffs. So I think that the runway is there for Graham Barton to have an elevated profile and become a Pro Bowler faster than even Ali Marpet. Again, whether it's a center, whether it's a guard, this guy just has the mental makeup, the professionalism, the athleticism to get the job done. And I don't blame the team for moving him to center first, because that is the tip of the spear. That's the more important offensive line position. And maybe he ends up at guard, because I think what John Spytek said, Matt, is they're going to let there be an open competition for those three interior line spots. Cody Mauch will be tried at probably either guard spot. Graham Barton will get the first shot at center. But if it shakes out that Robert Hainsey is essentially the third best interior offensive lineman behind Barton and behind Mauch, then you might see one more year and a contract year of Robert Hainsey at center for the Buccaneers, with maybe Barton playing left guard and you've got Cody Mauch playing at right guard. So having said that, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how it shakes out with regards to this interior offensive line. I'm a little concerned because I like what they did last year. They signed Matt Filer. Mm-hmm. They drafted Cody Mauch. And right from the get-go, they put those guys in at left and right guard. And you had that continuity all the way through the preseason. And I think that helped them enter the season. And obviously, the left guard spot was a little bit of a rocky road all year. But when you look at the fact that you have a situation where there might be an open competition into training camp, into the preseason, you might be sacrificing a little bit of continuity eventually to try to find the five best guys. And of course, Tristan Wirfs and Luke Goedeke already cemented at those tackle spots.
Yeah. I'm usually a component of continuity is key for really any offensive line, really any type of offense. I think we kind of saw that with the Buccaneers last year, kind of learning a new offense, especially early on in training camp, but it took a little bit. So yeah, you want the whole offensive line. You kind of want the starters to be named as quickly as possible so that you can get as many reps together throughout the summer and the sporadic preseason games they'll play, and obviously heading into the first game of the regular season. On the same notion of that, though, I will say that if you do have a couple of players all lobbying for one spot or potentially two spots, typically the person that wins the job is someone that truly earned it and, you know, played the best football. It's not just like we're taking the best of a group that didn't really show up. Usually right. someone tends to shine in those moments. And I think that's what everybody's kind of hoping for the Bucks as they head into this summer, whether it's a couple of the veteran guys, maybe one of the new guys as well with Klein that was drafted in the sixth round. So there are a couple of options for the Bucks, and I think overall we're hoping and thinking that it's going to be an upgrade from what we saw at left guard the season before.
Yeah, I agree. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out for sure. I'm curious with the new offensive line coaches, what their approach is going to be. And we'll have a chance to talk to the offensive line coaches, I believe, next week.
Yeah.
But just a little bit of a public service announcement. Tomorrow's show will be an interesting one at 4 o'clock because it'll be our first opportunity to really talk to the Bucks defensive coaches.
That's right. So
Larry Foote, co-defensive coordinator, and then some of the other defensive staff, George Edwards, Nick Rapone, the safeties coach, which is always a treat.
Yeah.
Kevin Ross. Casey Rogers, they're all going to be joining the press conference tomorrow. And so we're going to be having a chance to talk to them. We'll get some video as well as some reaction. And then we'll be reacting to what they had a chance to say. And tomorrow's Peter Report podcast at 4 o'clock. So make sure that you join us. And joining us here in just a minute, Tawny Sons and Tony Ivaranda from Tampa Bay Bucks Cruise. And you have heard us mention the Tampa Bay Bucks Cruise the entire draft weekend with the Peter Report live draft show. And it's an excellent opportunity for you to not only get a cool vacation in, but to also meet the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the first year's cruise had, I think, 6 players. That number more than doubled last year with 15 different Buccaneers joining the cruise. And the Peter Report staff is going to be also joining the 2025 cruise as it sets sail to Bimini, Bahamas, as well as Key West. And that's next March. So you're going to want to not only pay attention, but also sign up for the Tampa Bay Bucks cruise for the 2025 offseason. It's going to be a good time.
It's a good, good.
That's right. Join the fun with hundreds of Bucks fans on the third annual Tampa Bay Bucks cruise. It sets sail March 7th and 10th through the Celebrity Silhouette Ship. And the 3-night cruise begins in Fort Lauderdale, visits to Key West, Bimini, Bahamas. Last year's cruise had Yaya Diaby, Rashad White, Luke Goedeke, K-Dot, and Jamel Dean, Super Bowl 37 MVP Dexter Jackson, Hall of Famer Warren Sapp, Gene Deckerhoff, and others. Even more players are expected next year, as well as a special guest appearance by Hall of Famer Mr. Derek Brooks. There will also be photo and autograph opportunities with the players, a Raise the Flag sail away party, VIP parties with players, special player interviews, a water volleyball challenge, Bucks trivia contests and fun games, and more. Reserve your cabin now on the 2025 Tampa Bay Bucks cruise, where drinks, including alcohol, Wi-Fi and tips are included. All you need is a $200 deposit per person, refundable until August 16th. Visit TampaBayBucksCruise.com or give them a call at 1-800-975-7112. And again, all you have to do is just reserve your spot with $200 per person. They do have some single occupancy cabins. Those do go quickly. Most of the cabins are double occupancy. And here to discuss the cruise in depth is Tony and Tawny from Tampa Bay Bucks Cruise. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us.
We're so excited to be a part of the Tampa Bay Bucs cruise next year. We're going to be covering it from an editorial perspective, doing a podcast on the cruise. But for people that haven't really been on a cruise before, and that was me up until about 3 years ago with my wife and I. Hey, better late than never, right? We went on our first cruise. It's such an affordable, fun opportunity, is it not?
It really is, absolutely.
Oh.
There we go. Tony, you just lost your audio. Tony, do you want to jump
in? Yeah, I'll pick it up. Yeah. The cruise in general is an affordable way of vacationing for families. For, like you said it before, we have individuals, we have groups of men, we have groups of women, families, all that kind of stuff. On this particular cruise, it's a themed cruise. So you have the best of two worlds. You have the camaraderie of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fans, and then you have the open bar, the pools, the entertainment and shows and restaurants of the ship itself. So you've got a couple different things going on there.
And I think one of the cool things about that time of year is the weather in the Caribbean and also in Key West, Florida is absolutely fantastic, is it not?
Oh, yeah. When we go to the Caribbean, you know, most of the time you're looking at a degree change of 10 degrees either way all year.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a perfect spot to, you know, it could rain, of course, or it could this or that. But the chances of having a nice day out there are pretty good for you on a vacation on there.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the Buccaneers themselves, they're certainly accessible to the players. Yeah. Tons of pictures on social media and videos of fans interacting with the players.
Yeah, this is where it really gets good. We were at the draft party the other day there, mm-hmm. and you know they had some of the players there signing autographs and taking pictures, and the line was across the field.
Yeah,
you're on the cruise. It's a lot more intimate. I mean, not only is there no lines like that necessarily, I mean, you're walking around, the players are walking around, they're hanging out, they're eating with you, they're drinking with you at some points. I mean, it's up to them, of course, but sure. The guys have been, they're wonderful. These guys have been wonderful. And the accessibility to the players, to the fans is unprecedented. I mean, you know, you're sitting here having a drink next to Hall of Famer Warren Sapp or whatever. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're a Bucs fan, there's not a lot of other ways to get that close to your favorite players.
Yeah. And Tawny, not only will the Buccaneers players, a lot of the current players be on there, but you also have a commitment from Derek Brooks to join next year as well.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. We have a really great partnership with Derek Brooks. He actually came this year as well in Key West, and we are doing a lot of support with him in the charity because if you know anything about Mr. Brooks, his charitable foundation is absolutely incredible. Yes. So we are really happy he's coming back to join us again next year. So he'll be doing some presentations for everybody. Plus he hosts a charity breakfast and he's an incredible human being. So it's just another chance to really get to know the players as more than just players, see them in kind of an environment where they get to talk about things that are important to them and things that are passionate about for their community and get to know them on a much more personal, much more intimate environment, as Tony said.
Now, right now, I'm having a hard time planning my summer vacation, right? Let alone March of next year. But the great thing about the Tampa Bay Bucs cruise is really the only commitment that you need right now is just a deposit to hold your spot, if you will, and reserve your cabin. And that is refundable up until August 16th. But it also is important, too, that if you're thinking about going, to get your place because you're anticipating a sellout.
We absolutely are. And we are actually already over 35% sold out. We just opened up on April 25th. So just a few days in, that inventory is going quickly. So we do have a max capacity that we're able to hit. We want to make sure that we maintain the quality of this event so that the people paying good money to come and do it are getting that experience that we're becoming known for. So we will be selling until we sell out, but it is going quick. And if you want to bring your family, it's a family-friendly event. We want the kids to come. We want the adults. We want all generations to come and have a good time with us. So if you want triple rooms, quad rooms, things like that, those are obviously some of the quickest to go as well. So you'll want to reach out to us right away.
Yeah, Nathan Elliott says attended the 2024. He's already booked for 2025. Let's go. Operation Nathan. Fill the boat.
Yeah, we have Operation Fill the Boat. We were hearing that the other night. Yep.
Nathan's so much fun. It's such a good time having him on board.
Yeah. And you know what? We would love to invite our Pewter Report podcast viewers and listeners to join us because we're going to be there as well, the Pewter Report staff. And so we're looking forward to interacting with you guys and meeting a lot of you. We do it virtually here on the Pewter Report podcast. We get to chat and have some comments, but let's meet face to face. Let's do it in the Bahamas. Let's do it in Key West. Let's do it with drinks in our hands, surrounded by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It'd be a fun time.
It's going to be a once in a lifetime kind of event. I promise you that. It's going to be great to have you guys on board. We're so excited, and we'll be doing all kinds of special stuff on board with more events to come in 2025.
Now, the important thing is to follow you on social media, on Instagram and Facebook, because when you have announcements pertaining to the cruise, or let's say you've got those player commitments, that's where you broadcast the news. Can you give us your handles for Instagram and also for Facebook?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you follow us on Facebook, you're going to want to go to the Tampa Bay Bucks Fan Cruise. And if you are on Instagram or Twitter, it's TB Bucks Cruise. So that's TB BUCS Cruise. And you can follow us and get all the live updates there.
That's awesome. We really appreciate partnering with you guys this year. We're looking forward to having you back on as this Bucks season forges ahead. We're just now getting into the off season. We'll have training camp. We'll be here before you know it. And you guys will be continuing to reserve these rooms and until you reach the sellout. So if you're thinking about joining the Tampa Bay Bucks cruise as it sets sail March 7th through 10th next year, again, starting in Fort Lauderdale, going to Key West, and then to Bimini, Bahamas, go ahead and go to TampaBayBucksCruise.com. It's the official Bucks cruise, and make sure that you sign up with the deposit. Tony and Tawny, thank you so much for joining the Pewter Report podcast. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
All right. Well, Matt Matera, I'm super excited about the opportunity to go on this. We had J.C. Allen on the podcast during the draft show. He was talking about it. He had such a great time. Yaya Diaby, who was on the show right before the draft, was on the cruise. That he had a fantastic time. So I'm a little jealous. Can't wait to sail the seas with a lot of cool Buccaneer fans and a lot of people in the chat as well.
Yeah, 100%. I've only been on one cruise in my life as well, and it was like over 10 years ago now. So, just by the videos alone, it looks like a fantastic time. Yeah, the volleyball, getting to be around all of the players, going to some awesome places too. I mean, Key West is very fun. I haven't been to the Bahamas, but obviously it's a destination that tons and tons of people year after year like to get to. So, you get your own ride over there on the cruise ship. It looks like truly a fantastic time. And I think Bucks fans, if you haven't already booked, you better do it soon because it may get booked before you even know it. And it seems very exciting.
Yep. We're going to get to plenty of draft analysis in just about 60 seconds. But as Rendax Thinking says, I feel a Celsius read coming up. Boy, you're exactly right.
Yes, let's start talking about Celsius, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. I currently have a sparkling orange in my hand at the moment. We love Celsius for a variety of reasons, starting with all the great flavors that they have. I have the sparkling orange, but don't forget about all the vibes as well. I have a case of Oasis Vibe that I'm going to be cracking into sooner rather than later as well. The Galaxy, Astro, Cosmic, all fantastic too. My personal favorite is the Arctic Vibe. So it's really just a long way of me saying that there's great flavors of Celsius. So if you haven't had Celsius before, or maybe you're on vacation or in a different area and need to know where to find your closest Celsius, go to the Celsius store locator on their website, punch in your address, and it'll tell you literally the closest location where you can go pick one up. Might be a Walmart or a health and fitness store. Or if you're lucky enough, it could just be your bodega.
Bodega.
And once you keep going to your bodega and you know you love Celsius and you want to get more and you want to buy it in bulk, you can buy it in bulk. I'd recommend doing the variety pack because you heard me talk about all the great flavors of Celsius, and variety is the spice of life. So head on over to Amazon Prime, click on the subscribe and save, and you can have it sent to your place of residence really whenever you want. Could be a week, month, quarterly, yearly. You're in charge. You're the captain. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. By the way, let's give some quick shout outs to everybody for roll call. I haven't forgotten about roll call. We did it before, and then we went right into talking about the Bucks cruise, which Again, I recommend everybody put those deposits down. Yep. But we had a fantastic turnout on roll call once again. So let's start giving a shout out to Zaristos Faro. I apologize if I'm not saying that correctly, but watching from Athens, Greece, that is super, awesome. Super cool.
Very cool.
Rich Suggs over in Ashtabula, Ohio. John Jarrett from Chicago. Money Making Mitch in behind enemy lines in Atlanta, Georgia. Mitch, I'd love to know the thoughts in Atlanta right now after the Michael Penix pick. Right. Jolly Bucks Life, watching from DuPont, Washington. The Bucks go with Huskies every single year, including right, to this year's draft. So yep. You're probably a little more familiar than others, Jolly Bucks Life. Sticking with international, Frederick Raff from Gothenburg, Sweden. Brandon Rodriguez, watching from Colombia, wow. South America. That is so cool to see.
Yep.
Rounding out the last two. Last but not least, Malcolm Harvey in Jacksonville, Florida, and A Purple in Fort Myers, Florida. So just another great example how we have awesome fans literally all around the world, both international and in the United States, and not just in Florida, but really all over the country. Yep. So yep. Once again, shout out to you guys.
Absolutely. We love you guys. And you guys came out in droves for draft weekend. Matter of fact,
yes,
we had 24,000 combined. And this is just on YouTube. This is not on X or Facebook, anywhere else we were live streamed. Just on our YouTube numbers, over 24,000 viewers for draft weekend for our live draft show. That's second overall, just a few thousand behind. I want to say it was 2022. But also the top first day audience of all time, almost 8,000 on YouTube. So thank you so much. And also thanks for the super chats. We have another one here from Bernard S, $1.99 super chat. Our team or other NFL teams don't take UFL players. You know, it's interesting that Hakeem Butler is a wide receiver who's kind of tearing it up right now in the UFL. And I'm sure that there's going to be a couple of these players that are going to get signed. We've seen that already. There's a kicker. I forget his name. Not that the Bucks need a kicker.
Yeah.
But there's a kicker that's been nailing like 50-yard field goals left and right, like 55, 57. I think he nailed a 60-some yarder. So, yeah, there's going to be a couple of guys going from the UFL to the NFL.
If I'm not mistaken, maybe they don't end up on the Bucs, but if I'm not mistaken, like a couple of years ago, I can't remember if it was the XFL, the USFL, or one of those other leagues, but didn't PJ Walker come from one of those leagues who ended up playing quarterback for the Panthers and actually beat the Bucs in Carolina, like right after they traded for Christian McCaffrey, traded away Christian McCaffrey a couple seasons ago. So, you know, every year there are a couple of players from other leagues that end up, making it to the NFL. So never say never. Is it unlikely? Yeah. It, most of the time it's unlikely. But again, I don't think you can completely rule it out because the Bucs aren't afraid to just take the best of the best or the most worthy of making the team. I think John Spytek really said it well on Saturday after they were done with the draft. And he said, we're not afraid to make mistakes because we're not going to compound on those mistakes. And we're not afraid to play young players in obviously pivotal roles. So I think that would expand to, we're not afraid to sign any player from any league if we think they're a fit.
Yeah, exactly. Your question answered here by Money Making Mitch, Matt.
Yeah.
They're trying to spin it in a good way, but we all know it was a terrible pick. Of course, talking about Atlanta's Michael Penix, number 8 overall. That was the talk of the draft on the first night of the draft for sure. And maybe the Bucks will see him this year, but probably in a couple years if Kirk Cousins stays healthy and effective. So this was a long-term draft pick for the Atlanta Falcons. Let's get into some draft. We've already talked about Graham Bart. We think that's going to be a home run. Chris Braswell in the second round. So if you read up my insider, we had talked up Marshawn Neyland. He was a player the Bucks had in for a top 30 visit also, and a formal visit at the combine. And the problem with Neyland was not the film. It wasn't the player. It was the person. And just as I was told, not the right fit for the Buccaneers. So they kind of uncovered this at the last minute. I'm not sure if it was during the top 30 visit where it didn't go as well as maybe the Bucs were hoping it would or anticipating it would. But something happened kind of quickly towards the end that really kind of adjusted the Bucks draft board. And that's why you have guys in. And Chris Braswell, we didn't know this, Matt, but he was in for a top 30 visit and really kind of impressed the Buccaneers. And he impressed the Buccaneers because this was a player that the production this year, 3 forced fumbles, 8 sacks, an interception, which was actually a pick six. He blocked the field goal at Alabama, blocked a punt. But one of the things that really impressed the Bucs brass was his willingness to stay at Alabama because he was playing behind both Will Anderson Jr., a top 5 pick last year, and Dallas Turner, a top 15 pick this year.
Yeah, that's right. He spoke about that after getting drafted in his press conference, talking about like why he wanted to stay and just wanted to be patient. And of course, when you're in Alabama, you know, they're Bama. They get the best of the best. So it's almost a rare occasion. Like, you have to be so good to really start from, you know, the beginning. And he waited his time. He didn't have to. I mean, in today's NIL and transfer portal, where you can transfer and you go right away, no problem, no questions asked. You're just on a new team. There are a lot of people that get told you're not going to be starting. They say, all right, peace. I'm going to go somewhere else. And that wasn't the case for Chris Braswell. He wanted to stay. He loved his teammates in Alabama. He loved the culture at Alabama. And I think there's really something commendable about someone that
sticks it out,
stuck it out, worked behind the scenes to get better. It was a little bit of adversity, obviously, being told that you're not going to start. But what did he do? He still got playing time, even when he wasn't a starter at Alabama. But then he obviously made impacts on special teams, blocking a punt. When he got his moment, made a big play with the pick six, had 8 sacks on the year, overcame a little bit of adversity and didn't just, you know, take his ball and go home because it wasn't his job to take at the time. And I think that'll fit in really well with the Buccaneers. There's a lot of things to like about him as an edge rusher, and he has to improve. I think everyone knows that. But when you say that he's a violent tackler and a guy that finishes at the line of scrimmage and going after the quarterback, that's really something, not just with JTS, and I know we always highlight it with JTS, but that's something the Bucs have been looking for a little bit now. I mean, many times the Bucs have been close but no cigar, or second away, or they have the quarterback wrapped up, but he's able to just throw it away for an incompletion. That's not the case with Braswell. He gets there before the half second. He gets there before the half second, and that's
a finisher.
Very important. Yeah, he's a finisher, and we'll see how the outside linebacker rotation really goes because they got a lot of guys in that group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a day one starter. I mean, you've got Randy Gregory, who's got the experience. You've got some more experienced guys in Joe Tryon, Schwenk, and Anthony Nelson that are going to be balling out this year because they're in a contract year, right? They're not going to just lay down for the second round pick.
Exactly.
But remember, Yaya Diaby took him half the season to really kind of emerge as the starter. Mm-hmm. So don't be alarmed if it takes the second round pick. Diaby was a third round pick. Don't be alarmed if it takes the second round pick that much time as well. Bramble asks, or actually says here, so Nealon taken by Dallas picking at number 56 was meaningless. Yeah, it was. They were
surprising.
They were not going to pick him. And it's not like this is, you know, revisionist history or hindsight or the Buccaneers trying to cover because they didn't get the guy they wanted. I've already told you they were going to draft Marshawn Lloyd, not Nealon, but Lloyd in the third round, and the Packers took him. I also told you that they were going to take Michael Pratt in the 7th round before they ended up taking Devin Culp. So they did miss out on a couple of guys. It's not like the Buccaneers are trying to just say, oh, we got every player we wanted. That wasn't the case. But in this case, they did have Braswell higher. And, you know, he did have 8 sacks. Nealon had 4.5 in each of the last 2 seasons. I think if it works out for him personally, I think Nealon could still be a hell of a player. Obviously, the Bucs are hoping that Braswell is better. That's why they took him. So I think a very good pick. In the third round, when you look at these two guys, Tyke Smith was a player, Matt, we've talked about him ad nauseum, one of our absolute favorite players. Had a great Senior Bowl, had a great career at West Virginia and at Georgia. He was a 2-time national champion. He just looks and feels like a Todd Bowles DB.
He's my favorite pick of this draft. I'm just going to be on the record about that. A guy that can do everything for this defense, a guy that, even though he's a rookie, will be able to help out Antoine Winfield Jr. and Jordan Whitehead. Great football IQ, physical, can take the ball away, can blitz up at the line of scrimmage, and can cover as well. Yeah, Todd Bowles has already met with him before, knows him, obviously liked the player. Bowles knows how to work with younger DBs, and Tyke Smith, I think, has the potential to be maybe not the steal of the draft, but the potential to be one of the best players coming out of the third round in this year's draft. I'm really excited about him.
Yeah. You know, he's a great tackler. He is a hard hitter. He will blitz, as you're seeing here, coming off the edge from the nickel. He's a do-it-all kind of guy. He will fill out the stat sheet, and he's not the athlete that Antoine Winfield Jr. is. Winfield is a better athlete than Tyke Smith is. But this guy is a football player, and he's got enough athleticism to be really, really good either in the nickel or as a safety, whether it's strong or whether it's free. I like him better in the box, closer to the line of scrimmage. I think he can do more damage in the run game. He had over 20 tackles for loss, Matt, as a defensive back. That means instincts. That means when you're in the box, whether you're in the slot or you're playing strong safety, and you read the play and you know it's going to be a run, you're firing your gun. You're going downhill fast, making that tackle. You're not hesitating. It's the instincts kick in. You take the proper angle and you make the tackle, not at the line of scrimmage, not a couple yards past line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage. That just shows you the football IQ from this guy. And then a player that I've been texting people within the organization since he was drafted, and they just cannot begin to tell you how many times people around the league have said, you have the steal in the draft right here in the third round in Jalen McMillan. This is a player that was actually Washington's leading receiver. He had more catches and more touchdowns than Rome Odunze in 2022. I think Odunze had him beat by like 70 yards receiving, but more catches, more touchdowns than Odunze in 2022. He gets hurt, misses four games with a knee injury. As a result, that meant more opportunities for Jalen Polk. Jalen Polk kind of became that number two guy. But McMillan, when you look at his return, okay, he was the 100-yard receiver in the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon, right? It wasn't Odunze, and it wasn't Polk. This was the guy that had the 100-yard game to beat Oregon in the Pac-12 championship. This was the guy that had one of two Michael Penix touchdowns in the close win against Texas. This was the guy that had the only touchdown for Washington, period, in the national championship game. When he's healthy, this guy does some real damage. As John Spytek said, Matt, they were fortunate to get him because of the injury.
Yeah.
Because if he had stayed healthy, he would have been a second-round pick. This very well could be a Chris Godwin-like steal where you're getting a future starting wide receiver, 1,000-yard caliber player in the third round. That's what happened with Godwin back in 2017.
Yeah, and his highest-rated game, according to PFF, last season was against Oregon. And whether it was the regular season or the Pac-12 championship game, or, again, the playoff game, the national championship, he was the guy making plays. So automatically, off the bat, he's a player that shows up in big moments. And then even because he had such a great 2022, because he was limited the next season, you saw some other guys pick it up. That's why I'm so curious about him for the Buccaneers, because he was such a specific to playing the slot as a wide receiver at Washington. I'm curious if he is capable of playing on the outside and just in different looks that allows the Bucs to do different things with their formations, or if Chris Godwin needs a break for a series or a play, or same with Mike Evans. I think Jalen McMillan will be the guy that kind of flips this draft class for the Buccaneers. Can either go from good to great or good to average based on his impact on the Buccaneers, not just as a rookie, but you know, over the next three or four seasons. I think there's a ton of potential there. I think if Liam Cohen can tap into his skill set and, you know, he finds chemistry with Baker Mayfield, could be fantastic. Just very curious about how he's utilized before we can really make a true comparison or thought of what he can be in this offense.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I agree with your assessment, Matt. Matt, what happens when people super chat us?
You cut the line, and really doesn't matter what the category or the topic is. We get to your question or comment. So thank you to Vnod S for this $4.99 super chat, another one today, who says, you guys are awesome. I followed Tom Brady to Tampa Bay, but fell in love with everything Tampa Bay. Any news about Wirfs or Winfield Jr. long-term signings?
Yes. Unfortunately, we had some news that they were making some real progress with Tristan Wirfs right before the draft. And then all of a sudden, Penei Sewell got a massive deal that really reset the market. And, you know, Matt, sometimes, and Peter, people, sometimes when you see these deals come through, it's Laremy Tunsil's making an average of $25 million per year. So what does the next guy make? Well, he makes 26, right? And you kind of stair step it a little bit. Well, what happened in the beloved Christmas movie, A Christmas Story, one of my favorite movies of all time, they went straight to the triple dog dare, right? And that's kind of what happened with Detroit. They didn't go to $26 million per year for Penei Sewell. Now, they went to $28 million. They gave him $3 million more per year. That was quite the jump. Now, you say $3 million, the salary cap goes up every year. You know, like, that's nothing. Okay, well, keep in mind, Rashad White makes less than $3 million per year. Yaya Diaby makes less than $3 million per year. Cody Mauch makes less than $3 million per year. That $3 million, that's like a starter. That's like a player. Yeah. That's kind of significant. So it did kind of pump the brakes a little bit. I think the Buccaneers just have to kind of readjust and recalibrate. Now, the interesting thing is there is no state income tax in the state of Florida. That's going to help the Buccaneers. They'll probably try to sell that to Tristan and say, even though you may not be making $28 million per year, you're going to be getting more money because Penei Sewell is going to have to pay all of those taxes in a higher tax state like Michigan, where there's no state income tax here in Florida. So that's one little trick and gimmick that would help Greenberg and Light and the Buccaneers with Tristan Wirfs, but you're going to have to ante up a little bit more money because of that. I think Winfield, they have until July 19th to get that deal done. Both sides know the deadline there. I would expect something is going to happen for sure, 100%, that you're going to see Winfield's deal get done, maybe before Tristan Wirfs.
I'm sure the Bucs were kind of clenching their fists and shaking it in anger when they saw that deal with the Lions come through. But once again, not anything I would be insanely worried about because of just the demeanor of Tristan Wirfs. Going back to the day after the season when the Bucs were cleaning out their locker room and he was like, I don't really know. I just want to keep playing football. Yeah. He's like, I don't know the details.
Option, whatever that means, right?
Yeah. So he's super easy going about it.
He's not
going
to hold out. He's not going to pull a Devin White. He's not going to demand a trade.
He'll let his agent handle it. Yeah. And, you know, the Bucs have pretty good relationships with agents across the league. So don't worry. It'll just be more money for Tristan, which is good for Tristan. Yeah. And, you know, the Bucs have navigated way worse financial situations with getting under the cap and things like that. So
to start the fourth round, day three, the Buccaneers did address running back. We thought it was going to be a bigger back.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is Bucky Irving plays like a big back. This guy is 5'9", 192. He's about 10 pounds heavier than Warrick Dunn was, but you look at him and he has the scrappiness that Dunn played with, the ability to actually run between the tackles. He had more yards to the outside, which, okay, you figure that for a smaller player is going to run to daylight, but then he actually had, instead of off tackle, the second most runs that he had yardage was actually through the B gap. So he is a between the tackles banger. And if you watch any highlight clips, you will see that this guy is as tough as they come. The yards after catch is there. The yards after contact is there because he is a great receiver. 56 catches last year. He's a back-to-back 1,000-yard runner who averaged 6.5 yards per carry at Oregon the last 2 years after transferring from Minnesota. So, you know, Matt, I think the happiest guy when Bucky Irving became a Buccaneer was Bucky Irving himself, right? The second happiest guy was probably Jason Light. Third happiest guy was probably Todd Bowles. Fourth happiest guy, probably Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator. Fifth happiest guy was probably Skip Pete, the running backs coach. Who do you think is probably the sixth happiest guy?
The sixth happiest guy has to be Pewter Report alumni and current PFF draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. And if you're wondering, oh, Bucky Irving, weren't you just talking about him? We were. Bucky Irving was one of Trevor's favorite draft prospects going into this year's draft, especially if guys that wouldn't be there in the first round. If you missed that show, that's all right. We got it for you right now. Trevor talking about Bucky Irving. Trevor, who's a player in this draft class? It doesn't even have to be Bucks related or offensive line that we're talking about right now, but a player that you're fond of that maybe isn't a first round pick or maybe that people aren't even as high on, but when you watch the tape or you read more into them, you're just a big fan of this player.
Sure. I mean, there's a handful of guys at a lot of different positions where I think this question could be answered with, like, Bucky Irving from the running back position.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like Bucky Irving. I know he's smaller. I know he didn't test really great athletically, but we've got two metrics.
Film.
That's the thing. And we have two metrics at PFF that I love to lean on that help separate running backs and ball carriers from the offensive line in front of them, right? Because that's the age old question. It's like, oh, guy has a lot of rushing yards, a lot of rushing touchdowns, a healthy yards per carry average. It's like, well, is it just the offensive line in front of him? You know, is it him? What's going on? So a good way to individualize that, no matter what the offensive line is in front of them, a good one or a bad one, missed tackles forced per attempt, because that shows anytime you get in a situation where you have the ability to make a guy miss, are you making a guy miss? And Bucky Irving's is incredibly high. And then yards after contact. So again, that could be contact behind the line of scrimmage, could be contact at the line of scrimmage, could be contact 5-10 yards down the field. But whenever you get, when you get hit, how many yards do you get after that? And again, Bucky Irving, very high yards after contact per attempt average. So really like Bucky Irving a lot. That's somebody who immediately comes to mind as one of, like, my guys, if you will.
There you have it from Trevor. If you're a fan of Bucky Irving, or you need to be convinced about Bucky Irving, I think Trevor pretty much said it best, and John Spytek kind of echoed those sentiments as well, saying he's difficult to take off your feet, to take off of his feet. So whether it's at the line of scrimmage or down the field, he's not the easiest guy to bring down, which obviously the Bucks like about him.
He's not like the biggest guy in terms of pass protection, so that's something he's got to work on, obviously. But you know, Ward Dunn for his size was actually one of the best blocking backs I've ever seen at 178, because it's just about want to. That's really all it is technique and want to. You don't have to be a big guy. That can be taught, right? And the other thing too, Matt, is with the new kick return rules, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if this guy is going to really factor in for kick return duties, because it's going to be more of an offensive play than it is going to be the traditional special teams play. I think running backs are going to be more in demand as kick returners, because there's actually going to be holes at the line of scrimmage to kind of read, because there actually is a line of scrimmage. You don't have these guys 40 yards coming at you down the field. It's basically catch the ball. You're going to run about 15 to 20 yards, and then boom, there's a line of scrimmage right there. And it's going to be more about offense. And I think backs with vision, tackle breaking ability, elusive ability, I think are going to be better kick return guys than just fast wide receivers.
I agree. I mean, running backs in this new kickoff situation are probably the best experience to reading an offensive line, seeing what hole opens and going through it and trying to break a big game. So I think running backs are even more valuable now, which is great for the running back position, because we've seen how it's been diminished with contracts and everything like that. So this helps running backs in the NFL. I'm very happy about it. Very happy about Super Chats as well, especially from a constant Super Chatter and commenter, Meets McGee. Thank you, Meets McGee, for the $5 Super Chat, who says, McMillan will be solid year one, then take over at number two in year two. Trey Palmer should be more consistent as a number three in his third year. All right, so you're already planning a little more in advance. And I don't think we should forget about Trey Palmer either. It's just, you know, right now Jalen McMillan at wide receiver is the talk of the town that the Bucks live in, because he's the new shiny fresh toy, especially at a skill position player. So don't rule out anything with Trey Palmer. But again, Trey Palmer was a sixth round pick. Jalen McMillan, a third round pick, comes from a way more talented team that he played on at Washington versus, you know, versus Trey Palmer at his last year at Nebraska when he transferred over there. So, you know, some youth, an influx of youth at wide receiver for the Bucs.
I agree. And I think the thing, too, is you got to remember Chris Godwin's wide receiver number two this year, right? That's just set in stone. Mike Evans is obviously wide receiver one. Wide receiver three, it's going to be an interesting battle between Trey Palmer, who's got a year's worth of experience in the league, over Jalen McMillan, but McMillan comes in with the third round draft status. They're going to be, you know, trying to push him into that role and may the best man win. The interesting thing, though, Matt, is we saw some drops last year. We saw some lack of concentration. We saw some fumbles last year from Trey Palmer. I think that this is going to either push Trey Palmer to become a much better wide receiver or push him to the bench. And with every single rep, there's going to be more pressure on Trey Palmer. Last year, you know, with Russell Gage on injured reserve and the next guy either being Rakeem Jarrett on the depth chart or David Moore, who, you know, actually kind of emerged late in the season. But Trey Palmer had a little bit of grace last year where he's not going to have that this year. He's got to really be on his P's and Q's, catch every pass that comes his way. Ball security is going to be paramount, because if not, this team has a real viable option to turn to in Jalen McMillan. And I do think that you might see Trey Palmer emerge as an outside receiver, as an eventual solid number three receiver. Maybe next year, if Chris Godwin departs, it's Mike Evans one, Jalen McMillan two, and Trey Palmer number three.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the Bucs weren't done addressing the offensive line. And Shaggy, yes, please hit that like button. We got almost 1,000 people in here.
Yeah.
If even half of you could hit that like button, takes 2 seconds, please do so. But what I was going to say is the Bucs were not done addressing the offensive line, because in the sixth round, they went with UTEP offensive lineman Elijah Klein. Now, at the time, may have been a little surprising to people, not as, you know, well-known, but Brandon Thorne, who is the offensive line guru, had a great write-up about Elijah Klein and actually had him projected as a fifth-round pick. So the Bucs got him around later than I think some expected. He loves to run block. That is the name of his game. That's pretty much all UTEP did. And he is a physical dude in the trenches, in the interior offensive line. I'm not saying he's going to start. He'll at least be another body in the mix. But what I will say is you may think, sixth rounder, not that big of a deal. Who really makes it as a sixth rounder? Well, an offensive line, and the two people I'm going to say, they're centers, but I think it still translates, especially to the interior offensive line. Two other sixth round picks that made a pretty good NFL career for themselves, Ryan Jensen and Jason Kelce. Yeah. I am not saying that Elijah Klein is going to be the next Ryan Jensen or Jason Kelce. All I'm saying is that it is possible to have a great NFL career being a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the Buccaneers also had a sixth-round pick. It wasn't their pick. It was somebody else's pick. But Tom Brady was also a sixth-rounder.
Yes.
So you never know. It's not where you start. It's not how you get in the league. It's what you do once you get there, right? It's how you finish. And, you know, and Ryan Jensen was a left tackle at Colorado State Pueblo.
Yep.
Drafted by Baltimore and then played guard. And he was that's where he played for the first year or two. And then his last year in Baltimore, he moved to center. So this was a player that had some experience at guard. Who knows? Maybe Elijah Klein ends up at center eventually for the Buccaneers. You never know. But an interesting player. I knew nothing about the guy.
I didn't really know much about him.
But I trust Brandon Thorne like implicitly. He is the offensive line guru, friend of the program, and he loves the pick. He thinks it's tremendous.
We have two more Super Chats to get to. So, again, thank you for these Super Chats. You Super Chat us at any time of the show. We make sure we get to it. And, again, does not matter the topic. You Super Chat us, we're getting to it. So, thanks to LDBC's Most Wanted for this $9.99. Super Chat says, I love Light. Think he deserves a statuette outside of Ray J. But he's invested a lot of draft capital in the trenches over the last couple of years just to have the O-line get bullied and no pass rush. I don't know about a statue, but, you know, Selman's got the highway. I'm sure there's something we can do with Jason Light and maybe eventually Mike Evans and Levante David. Jason Light definitely has invested in offensive linemen throughout the years, almost every single year. I wouldn't necessarily say get bullied along the offensive line. I think you have to remember the plan in place was Ryan Jensen over the last two seasons. Yeah.
And Ali Marpet was still in contract for 2022. You know?
Exactly. So he had a plan in place, but he had to sporadically change that plan. I mean, obviously, Ali Marpet retired in the offseason. He had more time to figure that out. Yeah. Ryan Jensen got hurt the first day of training camp. You know, like you already have your team set in stone. There's not many free agents available.
Boom.
When training camp starts.
Right there, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's addressed it. the pass rush, I mean, they drafted Yaya Diaby last year. He led the team in sacks. And Kalijah Kansi, I think, got off to a great start once he was fully healthy. Yeah. So, respectfully, I disagree a little bit with what you're saying. I understand the frustration about the, you know, the run game being last in the league for over the last 2 years. That absolutely is warranted of anger and frustration. But again, I think he's trying to address it this year, whether it's with Bucky Irving at running back or what they did with Grant Barden and Elijah Clyde. So he's going to keep going after it year after year. I wouldn't be shocked if they draft another defensive tackle and an offensive lineman next year as well. It's just what Jason Light does.
Yeah, Kieran Butts says, Klein is definitely a light kind of pick, a ginger offensive lineman. Yeah, he kind of has a type, doesn't he? Alex Kappa, Cody Mauch, et cetera. But I will say this. I trust Jason Light implicitly when it comes to offensive line. You just have to remember, not everyone that he drafts is ready to go out of the box, right? You open up the box, boom, Tristan Wirfs. You stick him in there, Pro Bowl caliber player. Ali Marpet, kind of the same way, too. It took Donovan Smith a while, right? It took Alex Kappa a while. It took Luke Getteke, a move back to right tackle. It took him a while. It's going to take Cody Mauch a while. A lot of offensive linemen coming into the league, it's a huge adjustment, especially if you're going from tackle inside. So, you know, just pump the brakes. These players can develop into good players.
Exactly, yes.
It just
you'll see that with players going into year two this season.
Yep.
Thanks to Vinod S. for another super chat of $4.99. He says, how do the players bulk up? By the way, I could have super chatted you sooner if I knew how. That's quite all right. There are awesome UFL players, wide receiver, running back, edge, tight end. Your comments.
Yeah, I watched my first UFL game because I've been wall-to-wall draft coverage, but I watched Anthony Beck, former Tampa Bay Buccaneer tight end, good friend of mine, and his St. Louis Battlehawks destroy the D.C. Defenders yesterday. So I watched my first UFL game. I saw some good players there. Trust me, Rob McCartney has got both eyes on the UFL. He is watching every game. He's the Bucs pro personnel guru.
Yeah.
And they're scouting these players. And if they feel like that one of these players can help the Buccaneers, they're going to sign them. So,
and how do the players bulk up? I mean, the Bucs have an offseason program. Every team has an offseason program. It's a lot of weight training. Obviously it's a lot of working out on the field as well. Guys have personal trainers. And again, like Grant Barton said, your body is your resume. So guys are always looking to get bigger, faster, stronger. Exactly. And you'll see it the most with, again, the guys that were rookies last year going into year two, because they can get a head start with the offseason program because they don't have to do all these top 30 visits and plan and everything for the draft. They're just on a team and ready to get it going.
Yep. Sal319 with a $5 super chat. Thanks so much. Bold prediction. Klein will take someone's job before midseason. His size and strength is something others don't have. Well,
the Bucs would love that.
They would love that. We're going to find out. I mean, you got to keep in mind, Sua Opeta has been there and done that in the NFL. So has Ben Bredesen. I'm not saying these guys are world beaters or even starting caliber players. Training camp is going to shake a lot of things out. If Klein has the ability to step in, I think that there is a job opening. There is a help wanted sign at left guard right now.
Yeah.
They're taking all comers. So they will put him in the mix and we'll see. It's a big jump from North Dakota State to the NFL. It's a big jump from Humboldt State to the NFL. It was a big jump from Hobart College from Ali Marpet to go to the NFL. And it's UTEP. That's a small school. It's
right.
A Division I school, but it's also a smaller school that he's not used to going up against the competition. Now he did have a really good game against Oklahoma that really got him on scouting radars, but he's a sixth round pick. We have to kind of keep that in mind too.
Yes. Exactly. And rounding out the draft picks, Devin Culp out of Washington was the Bucs' seventh round pick. John Spytek said he'll be the fastest tight end in the room, so that's certainly intriguing for the Buccaneers. I don't know how he'll match up blocking-wise. I think he's a little bit more of a receiving tight end. But he can make catches in traffic. That's kind of the write-up on him. That's something that Cade Otton didn't do. So if he can kind of add in that area – it's a plus for the Bucs, and they're not going to be using as many tight ends as they go to 11 personnel. So, hey, you take a chance on a speedster that has some receiving capabilities and, you know, see where the chips fall.
This guy has a chance to be a real interesting kind of sleeper, Matt, because Roma Dunze, Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan, those were three NFL caliber receivers Michael Penix had to throw to. Yeah. Then you had Dylan Johnson, you know, a fringe NFL type running back. Then you had Jack Westover, who actually was the starting tight end. This was the backup tight end we're talking about here. So in the pecking order, Devin Culp was way down the list, but he did make some things happen when he caught the ball. He's good at making contested catches. He's a good athlete, very fast, 4.47 speed. The way that he's going to be used, and I'm kicking myself because I had him as a Bucs best bet, and I should have kept him there, because the Buccaneers were looking at guys like Jaheim Bell this year. They were looking at guys like Devin Culp. Smaller, undersized, Tavion Sanders, too, from Texas. Smaller, undersized, receiving-type tight ends, because if you look at what the Rams have done in years past with Tyler Higbee recently and Gerald Everett a couple years ago in Sean McVay's offense, they do a 1-by-3, which is one tight end over here, three receivers over here on this side. They try to get an isolation. You're going to come down with a cornerback or a safety on the tight end. The tight end is going to win that from a size and physicality standpoint. You're going to move a linebacker over to match up size-wise. This is a guy that's faster than most linebackers. So they're going to be using him in a Gerald Everett-type role where it's going to be more receiving, and he might even be away from the formation. He might not be an inline type of guy. And at 231 pounds, Matt, I don't know if you want him as an inline guy, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, but interesting player. He's a different body type. He's different than Kokeeft and Payne Durham and Cade Otton in that room. But one thing that's not different is this guy is a Washington Husky, and he probably knows half the building already when you look at Joe Tronchoinka.
Just teammates McMillan. With all of them. Everyone except Vita Vea, he was a teammate with at one or another at
and
Washington.
Greg Gaines, but
well, Greg Gaines, I think they were like locker room mates or something like that. He's like 24 years old, Colt. So he's like – he's been around Washington for quite a while, so he does have a connection with Greg Gaines as well. He's teammates with every single one of them except for Vita Vea, which is
crazy.
Kind of crazy to think, but hey, what better locker room to come into then?
Exactly. As Peter 941 says, McMillan and Culp both ran a 4.47. Yeah, that's true, and we'll see if he can play up to that speed too. Sometimes guys test fast, they don't play fast. It's not like this guy had a ton of production in Washington. But we'll see. It's a seventh round pick. Those guys aren't typically locks to make the team, or even not even expected to make the team. So, but a different body type, and we'll see. Special teams will always play a big role for seventh round picks for sure. One guy who is not terribly fleet of foot, but he can help you sell your house or help you buy a house, is our good friend Eric Gross with the Eric Gross Group. They're the official realtor of Pewter Report. Now, the one thing Eric is pretty fleet of foot at is getting back to you. If you call him at his number, 513-907-4271, for your real estate needs, he will get back to you lickety-split. In the meantime, go to housesinfla.com. That's housesinfla.com. And check out the Eric Gross Group website. It has got their inventory. It's got open house information. You can also follow them on Instagram and Facebook, Eric Gross Group. And check out all of the latest news they have when it comes to their inventory. But the biggest thing is you're going to want Eric on your team. So draft Eric Gross, and he knows the area like the back of his hand. Again, Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of PewterReport.com. Visit houses and FLA.
We got a great show coming up tomorrow as we will be at the Bucs facility talking to the Bucs defensive coaches. We'll obviously get some insight on some of the new rookies and new additions to this team as we look at the Bucs heading into the 2024 season. Until then, make sure you're following us on all of our social media on X, Facebook, and Instagram. We're at Pewter Report, and our YouTube channel is Pewter Report TV. We got the live draft shows up there, various reactions to every single pick, various clips from all the press conferences that we've had. We'll have more of that on tomorrow as well after speaking to the coaches. And so if you like all of our content, please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel as we close in on 14K. Bucks78 says, Pewter Report, thanks for the great Bucks coverage during the draft. Go Bucks. Thank you very much. We'll end it on that one. So for Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks everybody for watching. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast. Out.